Hello, all you frogites, frogettes, and frogspawn out there on internet land. I'm back up here in the Tron penthouse. It is indeed the Tron penthouse, and that voice you can hear is the absolutely lovely Janie Godley.
Yes, quite tired, but still alive, Janie Godley. Yes. Too many late nights. And walked it through Glasgow last night from the gig and walked right through the whole Brad Pitt film set. It was lovely to see my city look like Philadelphia.
Really? There's a Brad Pitt film going on in...
Yes. Which yes. one? I don't know. Something Zombies.
Something Zombies?
That isn't in the title. It's something X. World something.
World of Zed.
Yeah,
that's based on some graphic novels.
That's right. My daughter's a big graphic novel fan. I know Mark Miller, the guy.
Really?
Yeah, he's a mate of mine. He's Glaswegian, of course he is.
Oh, okay.
But I walked right through the film set. It was amazing. They had Philadelphia SWAT teams and Philadelphia flags and American flags. It was really bizarre to see my city look like Philadelphia.
Yeah. Did you see Brad?
No, I was expecting to see people die of AIDS, but that's a different film. But it's Glasgow. They still are.
You are like a how long have you been coming up to the Fringe?
I've been doing the Fringe since 1995, but I've done 10 one-woman shows, a play, a sketch show, a chat show, a kids show. One year I did three shows in the one day.
Three shows in one day?
Three shows for a whole month. I did a play, it's a really straight play called The Point of Yes up at the Assembly. And hit transfer to the West End, then I played it off New York. It was bizarre, bizarrest experience ever. And then at 6 o'clock, I did a sketch show with my daughter. Mm-hmm. And then at 8 o'clock, I did a one-woman show one year. So I did three shows a day for a whole month. It was great.
Wow. How do you manage to keep the energy up when you're doing three shows?
Well,
like that?
I don't drink and I don't do drugs. And I'm not mental, so... And I used to own a pub, so if you've worked 12-hour shifts, 3 hours is fuck all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nothing. It's just talking for money.
Which is never a bad job.
No, especially in my life. Men have told me to shut up, and now I've bought two houses, and most of them are dead. So I worked it quite good.
Because you've led, shall we say, a colourful life?
Yeah, I've led a very colourful. Colourful makes it sound like I lived in Jamaica, but it's cool. Eventful. I had a really odd life. My mother was murdered. I married into a gangster family. I was abused as a kid. I grew up in a sectarian family, then married into Catholics, and then I get put in prison for possessing guns. So it was a step away from an Avon lady, let's say.
Yes, slightly.
Slight step away from an Avon lady.
How long were you in prison?
One night.
One night, all right, okay.
Yeah, it was long enough, let me tell you. There's nothing worse than losing your liberty to make you realise you must join Amnesty International. Just spending a whole night in a cell going, they weren't my guns! Nobody listens.
Blimey. And you, was it last year your book came out?
No, it was 2005.
2005, sorry.
And then, it's okay, it came out in hardback, then it came out in paperback. It's called Handstands in the Dark and Random House.
Which is a great title.
Yes, it was. And I wanted it to be called Handstands with a Dark Man, but Random House said no. So, and it's autobiographical, but it's not a sad book. It's not like a child called it or anything.
No.
It's got a lot of fun in it as well. Most people who read it say it's nice. They could read it one day. And they liked the fact there was no hatred in it. There wasn't any. And then my life was sad. There's none of that. Although my daughter Ashley takes the piss out of it every week on her podcast.
Oh, really?
She says, oh, it's a book about Mexican cooking. Or it's a book about gymnastics in Russia. Every week she gives it a different meaning. She's very bored with it, you know. She calls it my sad book. And then she makes violin noises. Takes the piss out of me. Yeah, it's great.
Well, that's what daughters are for.
What daughters are for. She's doing a sketch show here at the festival. At the weekend, it's called Alchemy EH1. It's kind of TV people have got together, these writers and performers, and they just perform for sort of industry types, and I'm not allowed to go see it.
Oh, really?
Now, that's why I took Rolling Gift and stuck him in the audience instead. I'll get somebody really famous to sit in the audience to fuck you all off. Am I allowed to swear?
Oh, yeah, this is
perfect.
Please feel free to say whatever you like.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's no censorship and no restrictions on the Frogcast.
Our podcast is the same. We let
Tell me about your podcast.
We have a podcast called Janie Godley's Podcast that Ashley hates the title of because she carries me every week. She carry you, you fat bitch, every week. Why is it not called Ashley Stories Podcast? But it gets 100,000 listeners a week because we make it accessible not just to download, but you can stream it. Mm-hmm. You can listen to it on other forms because I don't believe everybody said, oh, Apple's brilliant. Apple's just a monopoly like Microsoft. Yeah. So I want everybody to get access to it. Mm. And it won a couple of podcast awards that I don't know the names of, but no. It won them. And we do it every single week for a year. We've done it now. Mm. We've done it live at the Adelaide Festival. Oh, wow. We've done it in Canada. We did it one night in a bedroom in the Groucho Club. Just sat in a corner like, crap, we need to do this now. Jet lagged, done it with period pains, done it fighting, done it tired, done it. My brother died. We had to do a podcast that night.
Really?
That's the thing about committing to this. You have to do it through all winds and weather.
Yeah, you can't put it off.
No, nope. And if you do, people get annoyed because it's not consistent. So. No.
And also because they're investing in
that's
something
right.
you're doing, aren't they? Oh. And what made you guys start doing a podcast?
Well, I suppose because we're funny together and I thought it would be interesting. And it's really nice because there isn't, we're the only mother and daughter comedy podcast in the world. And I think it's good because we get to share music, two different generations. Although there's no music on the podcast, but it's just a reflection of, I get my point of view and she's 25, she has her point of view. So it kind of bridges both generations. Mm. And it's, we've got a really good synergy together. We're not... Yeah. I know we're mother and daughter, but we work together and she's produced all my shows since she was 14. So she gets the industry and she's funny. And we've got very different points of view about things. So we get to fight and argue. She says things like, that's not even a word. She says that quite a lot. Or she slags my nipples off, which is a regular thing in the podcast.
Really?
Oh, you'd need this horrendously embarrassing. We try and out embarrass each other. We try and take it to the absolute limit, to the point where I told everybody she'd a blow up man dressed in her father's clothes. So it gets really embarrassing. And she said, why my dad's clothes? I went, you better not be dressing them in clothes you've bought. I'm not paying for some blow up man for fashion. Oh, listen to the smashing bottles outside. That reminds me of Glasgow.
Oh.
Smashing bottles.
And you're from Glasgow?
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
I am from Glasgow. And I owned a pub there for 15 years before I became a comedian.
Yeah. There was a lovely quote I was reading that you said, which was I'm not something along the lines of, I'm not afraid of doing comedy once you've had a gun pointed at your head.
That's
getting
true.
Up in front of 600 people is
nothing. It's nothing. Yeah, I had a gun pointed at my head. It was a really rough bar in the east end of Glasgow. Oh, that sounds like a really cheap coil falling out. I don't know if they could hear that noise. It was a really rough part of Glasgow, and we had a lot of gangsters and drug addicts and dealers. And one day a guy came in and I wouldn't give him money and he held a gun to my head and I just laughed until he stopped.
Really?
What else can you do? You can't hit the floor or... People would steal the till, so you have to face up to it. And I did, and it was funny. Ouch, sorry, I've got an itchy ear. So it was good.
So what made you start doing comedy then?
I get really... I get
in the bar? Was that perfect training?
Yes, it's perfect training. And I get bored. I just get bored because we had a barmaid called Eileen. She was Irish.
No.
She used to knit quite a lot, viciously knit. She did things with needles that terrified all the men. It's like, click, click, what are you fucking wanting? Do you want a beer? I was like, Jesus, Eileen, that's a bit angry. And she did angry knitting. And she wore jumpers and she'd lived in bars all her life. And I thought, one day I'm going to become Eileen. So I had to stop. So I don't want to wear applique jumpers and knit a lot and be angry at men and knit cats. I want to do something else. So I decided to do stand-up.
What was your first gig like?
It was really weird. Before that, I had gave Jerry Sadowitz his first gig in my bar.
Oh, wow.
Jerry started in my pub in 1983. My brother Jim was a drug addict and he was crazy. And he brought this bedraggled Jew into my bar and said, he does card tricks and he's funny. I said, we don't do comedy. It's 1982. We don't do that. Or 83. I can't remember the exact year. And anyway, we gave Jerry a residency of a year and he started in my bar.
Wow.
So I thought, and to see that kind of comedy as the first comedy you ever see live was unbelievably brilliant because this was when on the TV it was just Morecambe and Wise and you know, and
two Ronnies.
It was before Ben Elton used to be a socialist and it was before women even did stand up. You know, women sang then in a spangly suit and then told a couple of ditties. It was before all that, and there was this anarchic, insane comic, and it literally changed the face of comedy. And to see him do that was unbelievable. And I can still remember the material that he did. It was hysterical.
Yeah.
And to do it in a wee Glasgow East End bar was just such a fucking paradox. And everybody was like, wow, what the fuck is that? And then he did card tricks and everything. But he used to get me up on the mic to hold the mic while he was doing stuff. And I would chat to my customers and go, Jerry touches kids when he's not fiddling with cards. And I would be funny and the audience would laugh. And then years later, I just decided I wanted to become a comedian. And I'd, my first gig was at the Tron Theatre. It was an open mic night. And a man, still don't know who he was to this day, phoned the bar and said, you're really funny behind the bar. We're having an open mic night. I don't know what that was. He says, why don't you come along? It's just Glasgow sound effects in the background, isn't it? It's beautiful.
I paid them to do that every two minutes.
You did good. And so I went to the Tron Theatre and it was just like a student comedy night. And I was so terrified because I'd never done comedy. And the audience were so rowdy. And Ford Kiernan was on, who's now one half of Chewing the Fat. It was a big TV thing. He was a stand-up then. I just met him. And Phil Kay was there. I didn't know who he was. And I just grabbed him out and I told everybody to shut up and listen. And they all did. And I thought, now I don't know what to say. I've got all their attention.
Yeah.
So I told a big funny story about what had happened in the pub. And it went great. And then I thought, well, I can do this. So I still owned the pub. But then when I sold the pub in 95, I became a stand-up. And I was going to gigs and I was just doing kind of comedy. And Stuart Lee said to me, you know, you're funnier off stage than you are on. That shit you do on stage isn't funny. But those stories you tell off stage are hysterical. Stop trying to be funny and just tell people the truth about your life. So I went on stage and did that, and it took off.
You haven't looked back since?
No.
So you sold the pub, became a stand-up comedian, and that was the first year you also did Edinburgh, wasn't it?
Yeah, just I was just doing little slots. I didn't have my own show.
Yeah.
I had my first own show in 98 and then in 99. No, sorry, I was part of a three-hander. And in 99, my daughter did her own show. She was 13. She's still the youngest in the world ever to have her own show at the Fringe.
Yeah.
And, yep, yeah, and because she was funny. And then 2000 and 2001, I didn't come because I was running a comedy club in London at the Atlantic Bar, which was really hip and happening. And it ended because 9/11 happened and they lost their money because tourism didn't turn up. Fucking angry Muslims ruined my life. And so I came back to Edinburgh in 2002 and I did my first one-woman show then and it took off.
Excellent.
What made you become a comedian?
I'd always wanted to do it and I'd never thought I could be funny on stage. And I'd been an actor and I'd always had been performing since I was 15 and then when I was 29... A friend of mine who I met on a short film said, oh, I run a comedy night. And I was like, oh, I've always wanted to try that. And he's like, I'll give you 10 minutes. And I was like, no, I couldn't.
10 minutes is a lot.
I know. It wasn't a very well-run comedy night. And he gave me 10 minutes.
Clearly didn't know what he was doing, putting you on.
Giving me 10 minutes. And I wrote, I thought about it. Like, it was a month away, and I thought about it. And then, like, a week beforehand, all the thoughts that had been in my head, I wrote them down. And then it got put off for another 3 weeks, so I kind of forgot about the material. And then, like, the week before, I went back to it, looked through it, and went, this is in the wrong order, and that would work better there. And then I just got up and did it, and it went well. And I was just like, I should have been doing this since I was 16.
Comedy is, I always say that comedy chooses you. You don't choose comedy, and it is like an addiction. And it is like heroin. You will keep chasing that dragon until you get your next hit. And comedy does choose people. It chose me because I just did it because I wanted to get... I always wanted to be an actor. I used to write plays in the pub and I'd make all the old men take part in it and they cried their eyes out. Like, can we just get whiskey? I'm like, no! you must read out these lines. And they're like, oh, fuck. And I remember one wee man saying to another man, look, just read out the lines and then she serves us. So I used to make people act out my plays in the pub. It was a shame. It was a real rough East End pub. But somehow there was complete honesty in the acting in that because they didn't want to be actors. Mm. And there was something magical. And I put on plays and all the customers took part in it. They used to just pacify me, you know. They go, Jenny's got a wee play tonight. And they'd always, but they were so interesting and organically normal and honest. And the one-liners that they said and the way they portrayed themselves was the best acting. Berkoff couldn't direct this shit. It was just beautiful. And it was wee men who'd fought in the Korean War and they're now out of work, dying alcoholics, but they would get up and do a monologue for me, and that will never happen again. No. I saw something that will never happen again, and they loved it. They started to love it, and you know. And I always wanted to be an actor, but back then Equity was a closed shop, and you couldn't get an Equity card. So I spoke to Equity, and they says if you do variety, well, if you do so many hours of variety, you'll qualify for an Equity card. And I remember thinking, because I'm proper hardcore working class poor, I was really poor as a kid, and I left school because I had no shoes, couldn't go to school. And I remember thinking, I'll never get an Equity card, that's horrible. So I started doing comedy to get an Equity card, but I was good at comedy and I forgot about Equity. And then years later, Equity phoned me up and begged me to join. And I remember laughing my head off at this thinking. And then I work for Equity by telling other comedians to join Equity because it helps with your insurance if you travel. And are you in Equity?
I'm not, no.
Get joined and tell them I sent you.
Okay.
Because if you travel to a gig and your car gets broke into, that's insurance, you're covered.
Oh, really?
The fees alone cover the insurance. Yeah, I'm a big advocate of it now. Okay. And also, if you get screwed over, Equity's got the best lawyers in the world. They'll sue anybody for you. And I've had them look at contracts and everything for free. It's amazing. If you're a comedian and you're listening and you've been getting paid for work, join Equity. It's about 60 quid a year and it's worth every penny. Means that if you get screwed over in a gig, you've got the world's best lawyers at your fingertips. So anyway, I always wanted to be an actor, so it never worked because I'm a scuzzy bitch from Glasgow. And then I got a part in a TV soap here in Scotland called River City, and it's famous. River City. And I bitched and moaned the whole time.
Were you a bit of a diva?
I got a part. You know what I was? A psychic in a bar. I was like... And I remember moaning the whole week because I had these scripts and I just wanted to go do comedy. And my daughter's like, yeah, fucking old cow. You spent your whole life wanting to be an actor. You get a great part and you bitch and moan about it the whole time. So I've now acted in a few things. And I did a play. I wrote a play that was a real straight play, the one that went off Broadway. And it went to the Soho Theatre and got redirected. It was not funny. It was a straight play. And I'm good at acting as well. It turns out, apparently, I'm evocative and meaningful actress. Just fucking said words, but I wanted to be an actor, and comedy kind of chose me.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I'm hooked. If I don't do a gig, I get grumpy.
Well, I think probably your style of comedy, being honest and open about your life, will help a great deal with actually being able to act, because acting's about being honest in terms of emotion.
Absolutely. I mean, there was a scene in that play called The Point of Yes that I did, and it's really funny because I'd always considered actors to be such wankers. You know, seriously, I'm a comedian, you fucking idiots. You read out words. I mean, why are you getting an Oscar, Jude Law? You just said words, you know? And then, in a scene in the play, I play this drug addict who talks to her mother's coffin. But her mother's coffin's not there. It was just that it was, as Ashley called it, very Brechtian. I don't even know what that means.
Bare stage.
But bare stage. And she talks to this imaginary coffin that her mother's in. And her mother got murdered. And it's semi-autobiographical. It's about Jenny who took drugs and Jenny who didn't. I didn't take drugs.
Okay.
But I made the Jenny who took drugs have a better life. Because Jenny who didn't take drugs kind of stayed in a pub and never get any life. And she got a window put in the pub to look out. And it just served to show her what she couldn't have. So, but there's a scene where she talks to her dead mother and she's angry at her mother because my mother was murdered by her boyfriend. And she's saying to her, you know, I knew he would kill you. I knew that you would end up dead. And you says, I would end up dead with the shit I do. But I'm still alive and you're dead. At least you're out of it. And it's this big scene where she's angry at her dead mother, and she's shouting at this imaginary coffin. And I had really did rehearse well, and I got really well directed, and I did it for about 18 nights. And then one night when I was on stage, and I was really thinking about it, and I thought, right, I really need to put my performance into this. It's a very straight play, and people loving it, and they're coming to see it. And then the scene where I got to, where I spoke about my mum, and for some reason, right in the middle of it, I thought, fuck, my mum's dead. And it was like all the grief that I'd ever had sneaked up on me. And I thought, Jesus, I'm going to cry in the middle of this play. And out of nowhere, just out of nowhere, I literally wasn't thinking about my mother. I was thinking about this play, and I know that it's based on my mother, but it's not my mum. And Ashley was in the audience. I didn't know my daughter was there. And I was talking to the coffin. But in the middle of it, this unbelievable, it was, the only way I can describe it is if you go down a roller coaster and you feel your stomach goes up, and that feeling, and this all came up, and I thought, oh my God, my dead mum, my poor ma, she was murdered, and I had to try and hold it together, and I was crying while I was doing that scene, and everybody thought it was really good acting. I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown on stage. And I came off shaking like a leaf, and Ashley was in tears because she realised what had happened. She came running backstage, she went, you okay? I was like, and it was like the first time I'd kind of acknowledged that my ma was dead.
And
I realised that actors must do that. Good actors must do that in their daily life, where they pull on so many emotions. And it sounds wanky, but I think I had delved that deep to get this part out, that I literally unleashed the hell of grief. I took 3 days of crying. She died in 1982, but for some reason, it all just came out like a big virus. I was like, my mum's dead. And folk are like, oh, did your mum die in 1982? But it was like it fucking untapped this horrible grief. I can't hardly even speak about it. It was horrible. And it took 3 days. And I was petrified to do the play in case that happened every day.
Yeah.
And still to this day, when I'm asked to do it, I get petrified that I'll have that grief thing again.
Yeah, it'll come out.
So I must have been a good actor.
Yeah.
Or really shit at dealing with grief.
One of the two.
Yeah.
Possibly both.
Yes.
Was this the play that you told me you wrote for a 15 quid bet?
Yeah, with Jerry Sadowitz. Yeah. I wrote a bit
that.
Because we went to see a play in 2002 when I came up to the festival, and Jerry was here, and he's my buddy. And we went to see a play. Ashley loves the theatre. She pronounces it theatre, you mean. And we went to see quite a lot of theatre, and we saw this really shitty play. And I said, that's a fucking hour of my life I'll never get back. When I'm dying, I want that hour back. And I said, I could have wrote a better play than that. And he said, well, you must go write a play and bring it back next year. And you need to get a 4-star review in The Scotsman. And then you win the £15 bet. So I wrote it for a bet, and I won the bet. I got a 4-star review. And it went off Broadway and the West End.
Wow.
So it became more successful. We're still stunned by its success. We still go, fuck, do you remember we wrote that in the living room?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Jerry's great. I haven't seen him this year.
No. He is up here, isn't he?
He's slightly mental, though. I love him, but it's either good or bad.
I've only been in comedy for a year and a half, but it's always amazed me that the kind of openness and the camaraderie of comedians, but at the same time, there's just that slight weirdness or awkwardness to a lot of the people who get involved.
Yeah, because it's like the Olympic British running team. You're not telling me that all of them are trying to not outrun each other. They're all a team, but one of them still trying to win.
Yeah.
And comedy is very competitive, especially getting on TV. And it's funny this year because all the big TV comics, as you'll notice, most of them can't put a review on the poster because they get shit reviews.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them are getting a plethora of 3 stars.
Oh.
And whereas the underdogs that are not on TV are getting great 5-star reviews.
Mm.
And it's because once you've been on telly a while and you make all the money and you get the dream, you become a bit complacent, or you sell out your style for TV. And then a lot of other comedians get pissed off for you because they know that you were better than that. But then, you know what? I'd do a Magnus advert. I don't drink, but I would do it. I, you know. Seriously, I've bought enough consumerism shit all my life. Mm. I'm entitled to make some cash back. There is, I suppose, I don't know if I would. There is things I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
I have been offered some TV things that I said no to. I'm not going to say.
All right, okay.
But I have said no and went, no, I'm not doing that. And thought, and I was right for not doing it. Because it was shit. Mm. You know, and it's just there to humiliate you or it makes you look like a new act or it's just stupid.
What do you think about the like that TV show that's on at the
Show Me the Funny?
Yeah.
I think that it's relatively... I think the problem is they're not showing anybody the funny.
I think that's
one of the problems is they're not showing anybody the funny. They're showing them do these really bizarre, odd tasks. I've only watched one, so I can't speak about the whole lot of it. Mm-hmm. So, but the one I have seen is they're just showing people running around a city, and I'm thinking, that's not how we work.
No.
And then they get on stage, and then they're judged, and it's just kind of gladiatorial for the sake of an... And I think that the public look at it and think, fuck, I really don't like comedy now.
Yeah.
You know, you've got that. So, that's a problem.
Because I knew one of the comedians on it, and it was just kind of like, I can understand why you would go into that show. I can understand you'd think...
Carry on.
I've had friends who've done reality TV shows who've been in bands. They did like a band thing and...
I've done reality. I've done Kings of Comedy in 2004 where they put us in a comedy house, me and Andrew Maxwell and Boothby Grafo and Scott Capuro and Ava Vidal and a couple of older comics. And that was really well done. Mm. I liked that. That wasn't shitty.
But think they can edit you.
Oh, yeah, they did. And Kings of Comedy, they edited me so badly that people thought I was incredibly, incredibly quiet. They never saw me speak.
Really?
Yeah.
Ever since I met you, you haven't stopped speaking.
I know. And I watched the tapes when it was tapes before DVDs and before you could record it on your telly. It was 2004. And I'm thinking, fuck, I'm incredibly quiet and shy. And that was the way they made me look. And everybody, all my friends who were watching it, going,
That's not
Janie. What's that? Me just sitting myself on a bed, not talking to anybody, or me sitting in a corner. That's the way it looked.
Mm.
And Russell Brand hosted it. And I met Russell not long ago, and we had a good laugh about it.
It's a double-edged sword, TV, it can be, if you're not in control of the final product.
And nobody is.
No.
Nobody is. You know? And it's one of the problems with comedy for females on TV is the nation... In America, we've got Lisa Lampanelli, Maria Bamford, Tina Fey, fucking Joan Rivers.
Mm.
But in Britain, the females on the telly are almost desexualized.
Yeah.
They're comfy. They talk about cakes and cats and cushions. Or it's a big English woman constantly falling downstairs.
Mm.
There's no sexually aggressive... interesting, feisty, cocky woman.
Yeah.
America has all of that. We just have either a couple of women who are either ethnic and they talk about their ethnic background, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
And we've got a couple of women who are, it's all fat and cakes and cats. Now, I'm not saying they shouldn't be there. They should. But we should have more than that.
Yeah.
The guys have all became the 70s. Back in the 70s, it was all men in suits with short hair. We've went back to that. We've got Frankie Boyle in a suit. We've got Dara Brain in a suit. We've got Kevin Bridges in a suit. We've got Lee Mack in a suit. We've got John Bishop in a suit. The only people that don't wear a suit and kind of freewheel are the people that begin with an R. Russell Kane, Russell Brand, Russell Howard, and Ross Noble. The rest are all in suits with shirt and ties and short hair, and they all look like the comedians for the 70s.
Okay.
It's weird.
Yeah.
And you could swap all their heads over and wouldn't know the difference. And they're all in the same panel shows, saying the same things, with the same... And the women are all non-sexual.
Mm.
They're all very comfy, cuddly, almost asexual, in a sense.
Do you think it's because maybe like male audiences are more threatened by a yes. woman who's very open about her sexuality, yes. especially in the UK.
Yeah. But the US is supposed to be behind us. But they have Sarah Silverman and Maria Bamford yeah. and Lisa Lampanelli and Tina Fey and Joan fucking Rivers, who's 70-odds, being sexually threatening on the telly. Mm. We don't. You have to be...
Well, the Americans have always been ahead of us. They've always got to be, anyway.
Oh, I'm fat and here's a joke and it's me being fat and here's a joke and it's me being stupid and here's a joke and I like cake. And I'm like, really? Really? That's all we've got to say?
Well, there are a few up-and-coming open spots female comedians who I've seen who are challenging.
There's lots. Diane Spencer's brilliant.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Zoe Lyons, Joe Caulfield. Yeah. We've got them. They just don't go on TV.
No.
There'll be somebody in a floral dress talking about cake.
Mm.
We're like, you see, when I go on stage, people say, but that makes you sound better. It's not. It's when I go on stage every weekend and you're in an audience or faced by a woman, they think I'm automatically going to talk about my vagina or cats or cupcakes. Mm. And I don't talk about any of that shit. And it's the preconceived idea that's constantly compounded.
Yeah. I had a couple of comedians on the live podcast.
We're not allowed to be political and angry, you know.
No, I had the comedians Fern Brady and Kerry Pritchard-McLean, who are both in the So You Think You're Funny competition at the minute. Brilliant young comedians. Both of them hopefully will do really well. But they told me that... They sometimes won't get booked for gigs because there's already a female comedian.
That's right. No, that's right. I didn't know I was a female comedian until somebody said to me at a gig in London, there's a woman on. I went, oh, who is it? It was me.
Really?
I didn't know it was me. I'm like, who? Me? I'm the woman. I didn't know it was a woman. I just thought it was a comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very strange.
No, we don't get to work a lot because they have to spread us out. I know.
It's disgraceful.
But I think if women are good, they get up there quicker, you know. But I won't get TV because I'm white, I'm old, I'm Scottish, I'm working class, and I'm a woman. They don't have Scottish women on TV doing stand-up.
No?
No.
Wow.
No.
Well, that's a tragedy.
Well, if you think any Scottish woman doing stand-up, I'll take that back, but you can't.
No.
No, you can't.
No.
No. There you go.
So getting back to the Fringe.
Yeah.
How is, you've been here since 1995. Has it changed much?
Mm. It's changed because of TV, which is good. I don't blame the comedians and I don't blame the TV and I don't blame the promoters. I blame the public. The problem is people just want to come and see people they've seen on the telly. They don't want to come and see Carey Marks or Phil Nichol or Diane Spencer or... They just want to see Daniel Sloss or Sarah or Jason Manford or whoever, just people they've seen on the telly. Come and see Al Murray. They wouldn't go see, you know, Hannah Gadsby. They haven't seen her on TV, so they won't take that risk. No. So that has changed things. And it's a shame because, as I said, the big TV comics, a lot of them can't put their reviews on posters. And yet there's all these comedians that people don't know who are fucking ripping it up, you know. So that's a problem. And then you feel as though you've let people down because you're not on TV and they've been fans for years and they're like, oh, why aren't you on TV? I'm like, mate, I'm white, I'm old, I'm Scottish. I'm a woman. It's not going to happen, you know. So I'm thinking of dressing up in a burqa and affecting an accent. Hello, my name's Leela. You may know me as Lolo. So that's a problem, is that the Fringe has changed because TV has gobbled up comedy, like with the Michael McIntyre Roadshow, and people
made
just...
Made it a commodity.
Yeah, and made all the men wear suits. I mean, I remember when Kevin Bridges wore a T-shirt.
Mm.
Now I've never seen him out of a suit. He looks like a fucking insurance man. He's my buddy. He's my boy. I love Kevin. But for fuck's sake, you're younger than my daughter. Stop wearing a suit. But he has to wear a suit. I don't get that. I remember when he wore jeans and a T-shirt.
Yeah.
No, you have to look like you work for Bradford and Bingley now. It's bizarre. Men in suits doing comedy.
Oh, hopefully I'll never wear a suit.
No, you shouldn't. You should just be yourself.
I do try.
I think it's important as your own identity on stage and your own voice. people don't want to hear shit coming out of your mouth that could come out of anybody else's. They want to hear why you're a comedian, what you find funny. And I told you I contacted Richard Bating.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I did, on Twitter. And they said to me, is he funny? And I said, I haven't seen the show, which I haven't. I'm not going to lie. But I heard he was really funny and you should come see it. So
I hope he does come see it, because it's got a few mentions on Radio 1, but it's in no way derogatory towards Richard Bacon.
No, and Richard's a lovely guy. He emceed me at the Groucho Gang show a few times. Richard. He's a sweet man.
Yeah, he seems like a nice
guy. He is. He's adorable.
And the thing is, I wouldn't want to do a show which was deliberately aimed at somebody who was in the public eye. Just
for shock.
As an attack job.
Yeah, no.
The whole point is that we're going into my show now. I'm here.
No, but I'm interested.
Jamie. Oh, the whole point of calling my show Richard Bacon Stole My Face was it's that gag that new comics have if they look like someone. Mm-hmm. They will come on and do that depreciating thing where they come on and go, oh, you know, I look like Richard Bacon crossed with a gay musketeer or something.
Right.
And it's that starting point of...
Well, apparently I look like Susan Boyle, so that's shit.
No, you don't look like Susan Boyle.
But I've got better hair. Not today. It's just fucked. But no, the Fringe is great, and I love doing it. And this is the first year I've had off in 10 years, and it's amazing to come through. And I've never expected to enjoy it this much. I mean, I was out to about 5 a.m. with you at some point. 4 nights I've been out to 5 a.m. I haven't drank. I'm out all night. My throat has gone. It's shot to fuck. I have sleep deprivation. My feet are sore. I am having the best time ever. And I love doing shows like the Setlist Show and Spank and getting to do all shows that I want to do and getting to see stuff. I never got to do that before. I was too busy, because if you're a comedian, you're unbelievably wrapped up in you, and there's no two ways about it. Mm. You are a selfish fuck.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about me. It's all about the show. It's all about me. So nobody wants to be around you, you know?
No.
But I'm lucky that my daughter produces a show, and she's had a year off as well, so she's enjoying not hating people for a whole month and relaxing. She might even get a boyfriend if you like Star Trek.
Is that the criteria?
Oh, she's such a sci-fi geek. It makes me want to kill her. Ashley, you'd never get laid if you keep going on about Lieutenant Uhuru. It's just shite. And every time I meet somebody who's... And my mate Simon Pegg, who was in Star Trek, Ashley's like, and Mark Miller... And Neil Gaiman, she's like, I fucking hate everything about you. And of course, I met Steve-O, who's our big hero from Jackass.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to Steve-O, my daughter's such a hero. She's hero worships you. Mm. I spent my whole life trying to teach her literature and ballet and theatre and opera. And all she wanted to do was you eat your own arse on the telly. That's what she wanted to see. And he says, let's get a picture together and send it. I went, okay. And he went, do you want me to get your tits out? It's like, no. See, that's hysterical to you, but to me that's creepy. So in the picture he's trying to kiss me. I was like, no, you're not getting this. I just want to embarrass her. I don't want to be sexually assaulted. There's a cracking picture of me and Steve-O, and I met Tom Green and hung out with him, and she's a big fan of his, so she hates me because I get to meet all her favourite heroes. And I've met the Killers, the group, and they came to see my show 1 year, and she's like, fucking hate you. I hate that you meet all the people I like and you're just so not impressed by them. I'm like, you're who?
Yeah, who?
Oh, that's lovely. She's like, shut up. So I get to do that, which pleases me no end.
Wow.
There's a picture of me and Jake Gyllenhaal together, and she's never quite forgiven me for that. Mm-hmm. And we look like a creepy couple who go dogging. That's what we look like. We saw it the other day. We were flicking through pictures and she went, I still can't believe that picture of you. You look like a really odd couple that fuck strangers together. It's a really bizarre picture. It's like we posed for a dogging website or something. And she loves him. And I had a night out with him once at the BAFTA Awards. So I love meeting really famous people and name dropping just to annoy her.
Yeah.
She never gets to meet them, and I do. And I'll be on the phone and go, Ashley, guess who I'm with? Who? McFly. And she loved McFly when she was younger. She's like, just fuck off. I don't even want to speak to them. And they're like, hi, Ashley. She's like, I might kill myself. She's like, I can't believe you get to meet interesting people. So, yeah. It's weird. But so it's good for her to have a year off. Mm. She's enjoying it.
It must be nice for you because you obviously, since being here since 95, you will have seen new comics come
along. Oh, yeah.
You get to meet and then just watch them blossom and grow.
Oh, totally. I mean, definitely. I remember Ashley used to flyer for Russell Howard. Mm-hmm. She flyered for a lot of people. I gave Kevin Bridges advice when he was just starting out. Me and Kevin were buddies. And it was me who told him to go to London and get an agent and don't stay in Glasgow. And I got to see John Bishop when he played a 40-seater. All of them. Yeah.
It's amazing how quickly someone can go from the club circuit to just boom.
Yeah,
John
but
it's not
all about comedy. It's about engaging with an audience as well, you know. It's about the face fitting and an ability to wear a suit as well. Or a floral dress. I'm never going to be able to wear a floral dress. I've tried it. I look like a creepy matron. A psychotic matron in an old folks home that kills the patients. That's what I look like in a floral dress. I'm here to kill you. Yes. Not right.
Look like the woman out of Misery.
Aye. Well, like Kathy Bates. Like hobble people. That's what I look like. I wore a dress at the BAFTA Awards and I just looked like a wee man in drag. It's just stupid. It's not there.
Oh. So what's your... if you could kind of like... What are the things you love about The Fringe? Like,
I love...
Kind of little things.
I love going to see theatre that's really close up. Mm-hmm. Like that. Going to see really good plays in a very small venue and getting to feel it. I like that. I like a lot of the theatre. I like seeing comedians die badly. It's my favourite thing, watching comedians die in a small room. That's great to watch. There's a dark side to my nature that loves that.
Yeah.
And I like doing the late night shows and the adrenaline rushes and getting to meet lots of people that I like and laughing at the people I don't like. Mm. Getting to see Edinburgh look so beautiful. I mean, you can't not love this city. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful. And seeing it through other people's eyes is amazing. Some of my friends, because I did the Adelaide Festival, I did New Zealand Festival. I've worked in LA and see all my friends come over and go, oh my God. I'm like, I know, isn't it beautiful? It's kind of getting to show off the city is awesome. Nah, I like the festival and I like to see people who come here with a self-produced show really working hard and making money. That's really nice. Mm. You know, I like to see people get success who are really working hard. That's a really nice feeling as well. And the food. I get to eat lots of nice food at the festival. But not the Hotel Divan. Don't go there. Okay. I had a crab cake and it was £15 and it tasted like eating a baby's nappy. It was horrible. Oh. I complained and got my money back. Go buy baked potatoes at the baked potato shop.
Yeah, they're lovely. Not the one just on the corner of the Royal Mile.
Aye, brilliant. Oh,
brilliant.
Yeah, and getting to watch people out all day. There's people come here from all over the world and spend a whole day going to see the arts. Mm. That's amazing. That doesn't happen anywhere else in the world.
No.
Doesn't happen at Adelaide. People come out for one show.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen in New Zealand. People come out for one. People come here from Japan and Australia and America and Canada and Iceland and they spend 9 hours going to shows.
Mm.
That's fucking amazing. And seeing them exhausted with their book, they've sat down, they've watched 9 shows.
Mm.
It's cracking. It's my city. I love it. Because although I'm Glaswegian, but it's, you know, it's my country. It's great to see it.
It's your home away from home,
isn't it? It is. I do love Edinburgh. It's beautiful. It's just beautiful. And at night, in the city, just it's like an old whore that dresses up for a night out, and it does it well. It does. It just looks awesome. I really am very proud of it. Getting sentimental now. Might burn it down like I did the Gilded Balloon. Gonna burn this town down now.
Oh, anything that you hate about the festival?
I hate the kids up in the Royal Mile dressed in a paper mache boat going, row the boat, come. I just want to burn them. I can't get fuck out my way.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get down the road to get some Tampax out of boots. The last thing I need you getting in my way. I turn grumpy
can
as well.
Can I use this flyer as a Tampax? No,
no,
I can't.
You guys, no, you're an absorbent, you bastard. I just can't be annoyed with the hundreds of irritating children. I've got a show with Poppy. I'm like, I'm going to stab you. Get out my way. Just...
The drama students on the Royal Mallow. But I love the street performers.
The street performers are amazing. But those posh Oxbridge bedwetting cunts that turn up with a play about a man with one leg who once met, you know, Caruso the singer, and he used to pinch ladies' bottoms. It's all shite. Go and see a good play and stop looking at that bollocks.
Yeah.
And a big bunch of over-enthusiastic children in matching sweatshirts all bleating about Oliver.
Yeah.
You just want to take a baseball bat and fucking take them all out. And go, there's your Edinburgh experience. Take that, you cunt. Just that irritates the death out of me. Walking about in a paper mache dragon. Just fuck off. I turn nasty at that.
Oh, believe me, it's
beg for rain to melt the paper mache. Just please let it rain. Let the children drown in the street. They're annoying me. Would you like to come and see my show? It's all about a girl who lived in a lighthouse. Fuck off. That's me. It's my voice, that one there. It's quite snooty. I'm quite snooty about that. That's terrible.
No, it's not snooty about that.
It's just... hundreds of them.
I know.
And they all just want to flyer you, and you just want to paper cut them right back. And I hate the flyers that when you're talking to somebody and they butt in and go, come and see our show. I was like, what? Do you know, have manners, you fuck what?
Yeah.
Speaking to somebody here and it's my dad. Yeah. Okay, beat it.
I think the flyers are getting more aggressive because I've noticed some people actually like following people, just constantly talking to them.
No, my daughter's been flying since she was 9. She's an expert at it.
Yeah.
And there's a way to do it, and it's not irritating people.
No.
No. And you just got, I don't want, mate. I don't want to. Thank you. I don't want to. No, I don't want to. You can't get from one end of the street to the other without it. But that doesn't happen at other festivals.
No.
In Adelaide, Ashley flyered and she met Michael Bublé.
Really?
Really? Yeah, she was flyer than Adelaide. Hardly MD takes flyers. We didn't know. Michael Bublé went, hey, kid, do you know where the cinema is? She went, holy fuck, you're Michael Bublé. He went, you're not fucking Australian. She went, no, I'm Scottish. And she went, you're Michael Bublé. He went, yeah. And she went, got to do me a favour, going to carry that flyer all the way up Rundle Mall. And he did, and he got papped with the flyer. So we sold out because of Michael Bublé.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, no, I love him for that. Good old Michael. Crack on.
I like him because I read a story once where he could have had, any, like, the record labels were throwing every pop song at him because of his voice. And it's like, we will make it the next big star. And he went, I love big band music, I love swing music, that's what I want to sing. And he stuck to his guns, and
good
that's
on
what
him.
He did, which I have a little bit of respect for. Some people don't like him because he's, you know...
He's very sweet, and to Ashley, he was incredibly sweet. And he loves comedy, he hangs out with Peter Kay, he's a big fan of Peter Kay's. Oh. Yep, and he goes backstage when he's in Britain and Peter's on stage. And I know Peter, and my daughter said, you know, my mum knows Peter Kay, she came, he's like, oh, fuck. And he was so sweet to her, and he says, do you want my autograph? And he didn't do it pretentiously, went, do you want me to sign something? She went, to be honest, I don't get that whole autograph thing, but it'd be really sweet if you carried my mum's flyer. And he showed it off to everybody, and he was getting papped and photographed carrying my flyer. So me and Michael Bublé, I'm going to touch him.
Whether he wants it or
not. It'll be Bublé rape. We'll deal with it. It's terrible.
Bublé rape.
Bublé rape. We never knew this would end in Bublé rape. When you started this podcast, you thought, I wonder how we'll end it. Bublé rape.
Yeah. That's always a good... I always find Bublé rape is the point at which you should end something.
It is, yeah. As soon
when
as
you find yourself raping Michael Bublé.
It's time to end things. But you can get all my info on JeannieGodley.com.
Uh-huh. And people can follow you on Twitter?
Yes, follow me on Twitter. It's Jeannie Godley. Jeannie Godley on Facebook, JeannieGodley.com. And to buy my book, it's JeannieGodley.com/merchandise.
Okay.
And you can buy the book there.
Excellent. And, of course, your podcast is available.
It's all on JeannieGodley.com. I've got an amazing website, and I've got a guy that keeps it up to date daily.
So I have to do it all myself.
No, I have people who do that.
One day. One day I'll have somebody who understands XML tags and dealing with iTunes.
I get all of that done for me. I'm very lucky.
Oh,
that's why my daughter went to a private school. I'll get that shit back. I'll get my money's worth out of that.
Yeah.
So I paid $75,000 for her education. She'll fucking do stuff for me. That's how that works. I gave you my placenta and my money. You will work for me.
And the record is the youngest person ever to perform at the place.
Yeah, she still is. It's amazing. She's funny. You can go see her at Alchemy every weekend, Friday, Saturday, the festival. The last weekend's this weekend. It's free, but it fills up straight away, so you need to get in really quick. and it's down at the Trinity Apse, just off the Royal Mile, down Chalmers Lane. You know the lane right opposite the Museum of Childhood?
Yeah.
You go right down that lane,
okay,
behind the Jury's Inn Hotel, you'll see a wee wickery, a wicker sort of gate, and it's in there. It's at 10 o'clock, sells out, free sells out, you know what I mean?
Excellent. Well, Janie, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to
you. I'm about to rape Michael Bublé now, hurry up.
We're going to go find Michael Bublé and give him exactly what for. Up against the skip. Oh, is that the
you
Glasgow
just
way?
Haven't met me yet.
Oh, it's a wonderful night for a moon dance.
With your legs hurting. Round the skip. Okay, we need to end this.
We do indeed. Janie, it's been such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
I think I'm immensely privileged to have met you.
Oh.
And having read a little bit about your life, I'm so glad that you're here doing comedy, and just thank you. Really.
You're going to come to Spank tonight?
Yeah, I'm going to come to Spank, and that's a club night. Okay, we're not just going to go.
It's just going to get him spanked. Yeah, okay, he doesn't know it yet. Okay.
Okay, fine. Ladies and gentlemen, what I'm about to do is a far nobler thing. And I think that's a good place to leave it. Jenny, thank you.
Thank you.
Play the music.